First week, did Jesus exist? Second week, did he rise? And this week, the whole question of suffering, would a good God allow suffering? How can I, from a skeptic's perspective, how can I believe in a God that would allow suffering? Is where we're at for tonight. The topic of suffering, and of course it's a very, very live one. However, a quick quiz and reminder about last time. So what was this all this about? What's our burning cat about? Who remembers? Tacitus, cat, tat, the other way around, right? And the burning cat is because?
Rome was burning.
It writes about the Christians setting fire to Rome, which of course they didn't, it was really Nero. But anyway, that's one of the reasons we know there was someone called Jesus. And what about Joseph and sons? What's that about? Okay, Joseph had?
James and John,
okay, the brothers, and Josephus writes about the brothers as brothers, Jesus the one who's the brother of James is the brother of Jesus. So we again have a non-biblical source supporting the existence of Jesus, and there's more than that. But these are two that might help us remember. And also, last week we talked about this image and the idea of the resurrection. Why did we talk about this? Anybody remember why we talked about seismology and earthquakes and that kind of thing? Anybody remember? What's the significance of that?
Something that was going on far away.
Yeah.
Had a
major impact
somewhere else.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't remember what part.
Okay. So the establishment of the church is so extraordinary, and the establishment of Christendom is so extraordinary. Something significant happened. Right, so the idea of an earthquake happening somewhere and detecting it somewhere else, if you hear the shockwaves here, you know something significant happened over there. You may not know exactly what it was, but you know there was something significant. And the establishment of the church is just amazing. And we talked about this image, the upside down point being, and remember what the point was about this painting, Peter being crucified upside down. So things are upside down. Well, yeah, not specifically Rome in this context, although yes, but this is to help us to remember the unlikeliness of the whole doctrine of the resurrection, of the way that it's recorded, of the fact that they weren't expecting a Messiah, they weren't expecting a resurrection. The women were the first witnesses, and you wouldn't choose women in that culture to be the first witnesses. There are so many things about the story that are wrong if you're making it up. It's so unlikely. And so the upside down nature of the story, like Peter was crucified upside down, the whole thing is upside down if you were fabricating it. You wouldn't write it that way. You'd write it very differently. So the fact that it's written in a way that you would not write it if you were making it up makes it more likely you're not making it up. Right? Okay, that's the point. Glad we've got that, right? I won't ask you anything more about that. Now, as we start tonight's class, I want to show you a photograph of myself and my son Fred on an elephant in Bali, because I know you really wanted to see that. There is an irony here in that, of course, as some of you know, I wrote a book called An Elephant Swimming Pool, and that is an elephant in its swimming pool, and I've sat on the back of an elephant having a swim in an elephant swimming pool. So that's an interesting thing. But the reason I bring up the elephant is the elephant in the room when we're talking about suffering is this. We're going to find it very hard to talk to other people about the goodness of God and suffering if we haven't reconciled it ourselves. And so I want to encourage us with this thought that when we can't deal with that in all of its depth in the few minutes we have tonight. And the focus tonight is how to equip us to help other people with the question. But what I would say is that if you've not yet really resolved in your own heart that you are at peace with the fact that there is a good God and that there is suffering in your life, your friends' lives, in the world, if you haven't reconciled that well enough to where you are reasonably at peace about it, then I don't urge us to get there. That's our first priority of business. If we're going to go and explain this to other people, it's got to be something we've resolved at least reasonably well ourselves, or else it will come across as inauthentic and fake and hypocritical, frankly. So I'm not saying we need to have all the answers figured out, because I'm not sure that's actually possible with this kind of topic. But at least some kind of peace is very, very important if we're going to get to be useful to other people. Now, the point of tonight is to be useful to other people. We'll go back to our screen. Where's that scripture? No, I didn't put it in this week. Okay, 1 Peter 3, our key scripture is about the idea of always being prepared to give an answer, but to do it with gentleness and respect. Again, I want to emphasize, we're not trying to win arguments or prove someone wrong. We're trying to engage with people that have barriers to faith. barriers to seeking, barriers to finding out more about God. And frankly, I'm sure you're aware of this, as we talk to people, the idea of suffering is a significant barrier for many people today, for them to even trust that there might be a good God and that it's worth looking into the whole topic. So tonight, all I want to do is hopefully provide us with some ways to engage people in conversation that will then lead them to maybe take the next step beyond this particular topic. Now, the first part, though, is the work we're going to do ourselves. Here are three objections to, if you like, to God on the topic of suffering. I'd like you to talk to your partner for 3 minutes and come up with your best answer to one of them. Just pick one. Don't do all three. Just pick one. So, surely, if there is a God, he could have created a world without suffering. So why didn't he? That's one. He could have, couldn't he? So why didn't he? Second objection, suffering is pointless. Since it's pointless, then why would God create a world in which there is suffering? So what's your best answer to that, or your best way of processing that? And the third is the fact that God allowed suffering shows us he is not a God of love. How would you deal with that? So you've got 3 minutes to look at one of those with the person sitting next to you, and then let's see what we find out. On your marks, get set. Go. 3 minutes. Time's up. Okay, who would like to give us a, and I emphasize this word, brief answer to one of these? We're short on time tonight, and because these are quite deep philosophical kind of almost questions, so pick one and give me a thought. Yeah.
We said that.
Which one were you doing?
We chose number one.
Number one.
Suffering allows us to see that this world is not perfect, and therefore we could look for a better place.
Okay, a better place, to make a better world?
No, to look for a better place, as in heaven.
Okay, right, okay, beyond this world.
Yeah.
Okay, great, thank you very much, yes?
Number one, I think we said God created a world without suffering. Suffering came because of sin.
Okay. All right, there.
He gave us free will, so we led to sin.
Okay, and the free will topic's going to come up a few times tonight. Thank you, good. Yes?
We looked at number three, and one thing we thought was that there's a sort of, in that statement, there's a mutual exclusiveness going on between suffering and love. And that, you know, I think while suffering isn't nice, I think it's not impossible for suffering to, for God to allow things to happen to us out of love for us, that we'll actually end up having a positive effect in the long term.
There's an assumption that love and suffering can't coexist or aren't mutually useful, beneficial, or in some way. Someone has decided this can't be the case, but who are we to make that decision? Okay, very good. Thank you. Rudy?
I think to follow up on that is God used suffering to show his love. So there's a, you know, conversely, yes, suffering is there. Nobody would wish not to be there, but because it is there, God used that
to demonstrate. Love, yes, good. Another one, yes.
So me and Jaffa's thought number two, that suffering actually brings hope, resilience, and character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hope, resilience, and character. And who couldn't use a bit more of that? Mm-hmm. All of them, three of those, right? Yes.
We've done number two as well, and we said that there needs to be suffering because then it helps you depend more on God, and then it builds and deepens your character.
Yeah.
So if there was no suffering, we'd become quite proud.
All right, that's excellent. Thank you very much, Jonty. Last one, yeah.
So, yeah, we also did two, and I thought of a couple of scriptures, which was 2 Corinthians 12, which is similar to what Julius just mentioned, with Paul not becoming conceited. He was given a thorn in his flesh, not to become conceited, and then also Hebrews 12, where it talks about discipline. And enduring harsh hardship, which produces a harvest of righteousness.
It does. Clearly, Paul didn't enjoy his thorn in the flesh,
no.
But he was grateful for it, which is an interesting point there. We could talk a bit more about all this. These aren't the only possible objections someone might bring up, but they're kind of typical of the kinds of things that people might say when you're discussing suffering. Did you want to add something?
Yeah, I do, because all the things we are talking about is sort of the consequential suffering. Right, and we'll understand that. I think even a non-believer can accept that yes, there's consequence to when you do something wrong. But what about things that seem completely pointless and you have no control over it, like natural disasters? Suddenly there's a flood and thousands of people die. And I think think that's the questions that Islam believers have as well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more than the consequential stuff.
Maybe so. This is a very broad subject with a lot of different nuances and spin-offs, you could say. So we're going to deal with bits and pieces of it tonight. This is the beginning of a conversation, you could say. Thank you. A couple of quotes for us. I don't remember if I put this one on the handout, but by C.S. Lewis. God created things which had free will. That means creatures which can do wrong and right. Some people think they can imagine a creature which was free but had no possibility of going wrong, but I can't. If a thing is free to be good, it's also free to be bad. And free will is what has made evil possible. Why then did God give them free will? Because free will, though it makes evil possible, is also the only thing that makes possible any love or goodness or joy worth having. Why did God create a world that had suffering in it? Because it's the only way to demonstrate and express love, because we need free will for that to be a reality. Douglas Jacoby, in his book, When God is Silent, says this: were it not for pain and suffering in our earthly lives, bravery, heroism, and even stamina would be meaningless. There's some value in the suffering that we experience, and it's in this world. We might ask, in terms of the question of why create a world in which there is suffering, we might ask ourselves the question, most of us here, many of us here, why we have children. Not just having them being suffering, but bringing them into a world in which they, we know, will experience a great deal of suffering and pain. And yet, the human race continues to do this at quite a rate. So, there's something very positive about that. Of course, a lot of the suffering in our world and in our own lives is of our own making. And maybe the majority. In fact, I would argue almost certainly the vast majority of the personal suffering is of our own making, one way or another. Some of it's emotional. I was thinking back to my university days recently, and my first girlfriend at university, who my best friend stole from me. I should tell you his name. Mike Davison. For the camera, you know who you are. Mike and I got in touch with him recently, and we're all cool. But he didn't end up with her anyway, and that's fine. But the truth is, I raged against him for a year. He turned my best friend into the person I hated the most in the world. But the truth is, the reason that happened is because I treated my girlfriend abominably. I mean, honestly, yeah, I wasn't. Anyway, enough on that. Gosh, that's horrible stories. But it was my fault, not really his. It was to do with me. There's the pain of shame. Like when Barclays Bank wrote to me and said, please remove your account. Because I was so financial. It was my fault. I was so financially inept and financially irresponsible that they said, we will no longer allow you to bank with us. I was going to say, please take your money elsewhere, but I didn't have any, so it was more, please take your debt elsewhere and inflict it on some other institution. So there are different kinds of pain, and then there's the physical pain that many of us and live. And I have ongoing neck pain, which is more or less, you know, constant. But that is also self-inflicted, in that I, about 30, 25 years ago, I was in a gym trying to impress some other gym rat, and my gym buddy, and bench pressed more than was wise, and then this happened. So, you know, an awful lot of our own pain is self-inflicted. Not all, it has to be said, but an awful lot of it is. So let's with the rest of our time here, let's talk about positive aspects of suffering, because I believe there are, and these are worth talking about with our friends. Maybe these are points you might try and remember to be able to share with a friend of yours if you wanted to talk about these issues. Firstly, and it's been alluded to already, it's part of how we grow. Suffering is part of how we grow. Parents allow children to suffer because that's how they will grow. We don't allow it to go beyond a certain point, but there is some suffering involved. Suffering is the stimulus to growth, I would say. Life, in some ways, what is life? Life is a period of time on this earth which is hopefully about growth, punctuated by loss or propelled by loss and pain. You mentioned Hebrews 12, I think. And no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who've been trained by it. I could use a bit more righteousness. I could use a bit more peace. It's going to come through suffering. Or Romans 8, an interesting verse, often misapplied. We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. That part of the verse is sounds very nice, but if you're suffering, it's not particularly helpful, I have found. But sometimes we miss the point of what God is doing. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn amongst many brothers and sisters. In other words, the tough stuff God can use for good, but the point is making us more like Jesus, which is about transformation and growth and change, which is always painful. So that's the good that he is doing. The good that he is doing is not making our lives easy. The good that he is doing is making our lives more Christ-like, which will make our lives better, but not necessarily easier, as we know. And Paul talks about wanting to know the power of the resurrection on participating in the sufferings of Christ, so that he can attain to the resurrection from the dead, become like him in his death. So Paul understands suffering as helping him become more like Jesus. That's Philippians 3, verses 10 and 11. So pain, suffering is indeed how we grow. Pain is also how we find the truth. It's how we find the truth. Viktor Frankl, who's heard of Viktor Frankl? Frankl, Holocaust survivor. Okay, very influential in the psychotherapy field. He's died a few years ago now. Went through Auschwitz. It's a horrendous story. If you get a chance to read his relatively short book called Man's Search for Meaning, I can recommend it. It's deep and heavy, but it is incredibly profound. He founded a psychotherapy discipline called logotherapy, which is very interesting and I think is the most Christian-like of all therapies. He's a Jewish guy, so it's based on all the Jewish principles. It's really an interesting thing. I don't know if you've come across logotherapy. Him, but not a thing. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I'll come back to that another time. But when you suffer, things are stripped away to the point where then you find the truth. When you have nothing, when you're suffering, the stuff that distracts you from the real meaning of life is taken away. And you're then enabled to discover what the meaning of life is, which is Frankl's whole point. We need pain to discover the truth, to discover meaning. When someone goes to see my wife as the doctor, she sometimes will prod them in places that hurt. Not to create the pain for its own sake, but because to know where the pain is, you find the pain, you know where the problem is. Perhaps the same is true for Ben and Tidu when they do their dental practice. I don't know if they want people to be in pain, I'm sure they don't, but sometimes you have to locate the pain to find the problem, to find the solution. It's pain that shows you the truth. Viktor Frankl found meaning in the suffering. His meaning in the suffering was to share with the world, if he could survive Auschwitz, to share with the world that you can find meaning in anything. As, I don't know if he said this or he's quoting this quote, those who have a why to live can bear with almost any how. We've got to find our meaning. The world is bereft of meaning. It's caught up in a maelstrom of opinions and fear and anger and bitterness. We see this in our country, we see it in the world, and it's partly at least because people haven't found their meaning. They're looking at the suffering, they're not looking at what that can strip away and burn away and reveal about themselves and about their society. Then we can deal with the real issues.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot to go, we could talk more about there. Another positive thought about suffering is that it points us towards God. It points us towards God. as Lewis said again, and he's great on this topic, we can ignore even pleasure, but pain insists upon being attended to. God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And I won't take a poll now, but I would imagine that for quite a lot of us here, that what preceded our seeking God, what came before we got serious about our search for God, was a significant amount of pain. In our lives, probably, but maybe also people around us that we cared about. Or maybe it was an incident. I remember Toye Oshambiyi, who is coming to
tomorrow,
right? He told me that his spiritual awakening came because of the Iraq War. When he saw the first Iraq War on television, and he watched what was going on, it just woke him up to the fact that this world is in a mess. So it was actually the pain of elsewhere, if you like, but it was pain, it was suffering, it was mess that woke him up to his need for God. And that's so true for us. And that's really important, because when we're talking to people who suffer, we should not lose sight of the possibility that although they're in the middle of their suffering and arguing with the suffering and arguing perhaps with you or with God about the suffering, it might be that if you hang in there long enough with them, that they will then begin, in a sense, to relax or to see the point of the suffering, and then you can be their guide to help them to find God through the suffering that's woken them up. There's always hope in that possibility for people. It is one of the positive aspects of suffering, is that it can help us to seek God and to find him. And finally, it is also what can motivate us to make a difference. Suffering can be an opportunity for us to make a difference, or anybody to make a difference in this world. Our suffering engenders empathy for others who suffer. Right? When you've been through something difficult, then you're able to sympathize with somebody else. How do you feel when someone understands your suffering because they shared in your suffering? When I meet people, my mother lost a child when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and so my baby brother, Jeremy, I never got to actually see. He died about 2 hours after birth. And I didn't grieve that much at the time because I was young. I didn't understand. I wasn't involved. I didn't go to the funeral. But as I grew up, and later in my 30s, I started thinking about it, and I began to grieve the fact that I didn't have a brother growing up. I had a sister, but I could have had a brother, but I didn't. But now when I talk to people who've been through a similar circumstance, there's a bond, an instant bond that we have because of that kind of suffering, that empathy. It helps us to empathize with each other when we've both been through some suffering. It is worth perhaps making the point that Christians globally are at the forefront of alleviating suffering, of taking the opportunity to show the love of God to people who are in suffering. I may have shared this here before, but where I live in Watford, there's an organization called Street Angels, which are in various towns and cities across the country, maybe even internationally. And they go out at night on Friday nights and Saturday nights, all night. And they're out there patrolling around the pubs and the nightclubs and those kinds of places. And they're mostly fairly elderly people. People are retired. And they're out there all night, all weathers, Friday night, Saturday night. And as people stumble out of clubs and throw up all over these people's shoes, and they don't know how to get home, and they've lost their phone and their money and their keys, these are Christians from churches in Watford who help them to get on their feet, to pick up their belongings, to find out how to get them home, sort them out. And it's well known in Watford. But all the institutions in Watford love the church in Watford, the church in general. The hospitals love the church because there's less people in A&E. The hospital, the police love the church because there's less crime. On Friday nights and Saturday nights, when the Street Angels are out and about, crime drops by 60% in Watford. No wonder the police love the church. Now, isn't that a great witness? Rather than say, all these terrible things are happening, all these people are drunk and taking drugs, and, well, let's go and be involved. Suffering gives us the opportunity to make a difference. Think about the people you admire the most, like a Gandhi, like a Mother Teresa. I mean, those people wouldn't be in our consciousness unless they had participated in doing something about suffering. And their nobility and their strength and their heart has inspired literally millions and millions of people to do something, at least. Jesus is our example. He understands us. And he was tempted like us, but he did not sin. He empathizes with us. We, through our suffering, can empathize with others. And he had a desire to make a difference in this world by setting the oppressed free and so on, that passage in Luke chapter 4. There's a lot more we can say about this, but we're going to wrap up here. And just to finish up, I'd like to suggest that we think about these four positive aspects of suffering. That suffering helps us grow. Suffering helps us to find the truth. Suffering helps us to seek God. And suffering motivates us to make a difference in this world. For your friend, you might like ask these questions. Having been through some of this material, how do these thoughts affect your view of God? You did think this about God. Now do you think the same, or has your view changed? How do these thoughts affect your view of Christianity, of what Jesus was all about? And would you like to know more? And of course, one of the key verses on this theme is John 7:17. Why not try out the teachings of Jesus to see if it can make sense of your life, to see if it can make sense even of the suffering in your life and suffering in this world. We won't try and skip around the issue of suffering. We'll face it head on, but we believe that there is something positive to be said about it. Well, that's what we have time for tonight. There's a lot more we could do, but that'll be it for now. Thanks so much for your attention and your help with this. And if you've got other thoughts about this topic, do let me know, and we can maybe do some future classes on that kind of stuff. Thanks a lot, everybody.